But before I get to you, I have to bring on the next guest, Justin Raimondo. He's the editorial director of antiwar.com and is the author of Reclaiming the Right, the Lost Legacy of the Conservative Movement. Welcome to the show, boss.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you this morning?
I'm waking up here. No, I'm fine.
All right. Well, listen, I want to ask you, what is a neoconservative? Because, of course, we've all heard tell here and there, and, of course, people who read your articles know that the current foreign policy of the United States government in the Middle East is really the brainchild of this group of neoconservatives. But rather than letting you answer that question, Justin, I wanted to go ahead and let Michael Ledeen, a very important neoconservative leader himself, answer the question, what is a neoconservative? Dave, hit it.
The word was invented by Irving Kristol. Right, who said a neoconservative is a liberal who's been mugged by reality. There are many of us, Richard Perle being the greatest example, and I think basically we still think of ourselves as Scoop Jackson Democrats. Right, why are people who advocate revolution called conservative? Right, I don't know. Beats me.
And that's a clip from Michael Ledeen from the new movie World War IV. Why are revolutionaries called conservative? I don't know. Beats me, he says. So tell me, Justin, in your own words, answer me this. Is a neoconservative just a radical leftist Republican?
Radical leftist Republican. Yeah, well, I mean, basically, they're red on the inside and red, white, and blue on the outside. I mean, that's basically how it goes.
I mean, he just said he doesn't even really repudiate his leftist origins. He says, Pearl and I and others, we still think of ourselves as Democrats.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look who basically fought the Vietnam War. It was Lyndon Baines Johnson, a Democrat. So, that's the history of a neoconservative movement. I mean, these guys started out as far left-wingers, and then they basically got less radical on domestic politics, but got more radical when it came to foreign policy.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's invade the world. That's not exactly a conservative idea.
No, it doesn't sound like one. So neoconservative, a new conservative, it doesn't describe someone who believes in conservatism nowadays, like, say, Sean Hannity or something, but it's really more of a biographical designation of an individual, someone who used to be a radical leftist and then became a right-wing warmonger.
Right, but then, see, you have to understand that, some of these guys were never even real leftists, like Ledeen was, but some of the younger ones, of course, weren't. I mean, they are now just neocons, and, a neocon is somebody who basically cares about foreign policy above everything. That's the most important issue to them, and they take, decidedly non-conservative view when it comes to foreign policy, which is, let's just be as aggressive as we possibly can. The answer to everything is war. I mean, that's basically the neoconservative worldview.
So then the average conservative Republican voter who's pro-war, like, say, Richard, who just called in before the last break, basically then those people are just suckers. They have fallen for a policy advocated by a bunch of former communists.
Right. I mean, I wouldn't attack him specifically since he can't really defend himself. But,
he had his say.
Right, right. But, these guys are you're right. I mean, they've been taken in, basically. And, I mean, that's not conservatism. But, since the 9/11 terrorist attacks, it seems everything has been inverted. Liberal means what? What's a liberal now? It's somebody who's for civil liberties, who's against war, who, is for smaller, more limited government. I mean, what's that about?
Yeah, I don't know. That's coming from the author of Reclaiming the American Right.
Right.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, now, Andrew Coburn wrote a great book about Donald Rumsfeld recently, and his definition of a neocon is, he says the neocons are the intersection of the Israel lobby and the military-industrial complex.
There you go.
Well, I mean, that's actually kind of funny, there's more to it than that, you know.
Well, these guys are very tied. They are very tied to companies like Lockheed and Northrop Grumman and so forth, aren't they?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's true. The Israel lobby, yeah. But I mean, these guys believe in power, pure power. They worship power. Like they love Abraham Lincoln, for example, not because he freed the slaves, but because he was a decisive person who jailed his political opponents, and you know, fought the Civil War successfully. Churchill, the same thing. Here's somebody who, was decisive, who stood alone against public opinion, at times, and again, who fought a war successfully. So,
and Franklin Roosevelt, too, who, to my understanding, is the bane of all things conservative. Don't conservatives, really regret, looking back in history, and regret the New Deal and the four-term presidency of Franklin Roosevelt, yet these neocons hold him up as a giant hero.
Right, right. Newt Gingrich loves to talk about Franklin Roosevelt and how wonderful he is. And, it's kind of odd to hear that, but, the new conservatives don't really have any principles, like real political principles, except power worship. That's what they believe in. Power.
Mm-hmm. And so now tell me quickly, Justin, what would a conservative foreign policy look like?
Well, a conservative foreign policy would be, first of all, prudent above everything. And, I mean, it's more of a temperamental kind of a thing, but it is, a sort of black and white, cut and dried thing.
Well, would it be fair if they called you an isolationist?
Nah. That's a smear word, basically. You're an isolationist, means that you're in favor of peace.
You're right. Yeah, so, I think back in the 18th century, they called it independence, right?
Right, and yes. And, they called it going our own way. Look, I'm in favor of trading with people, just not invading their countries. That's not really isolationism. Isolationism is, say, Korea in the 16th century.
Well, Ron Paul, the Republican candidate for president, he says that our choice is between republic or empire, that we can't have both.
Right. Well, and he's right. We either have small, limited government with, limited taxation, or we, have this huge empire on which the sun never sets. So,
Chalmers Johnson's new book, Nemesis, he talks about the parallels between the American Empire and the Roman Empire and the British Empire.
Yeah.
And particularly in terms of those empires' relations with their own people back home. And he said that the Romans had a choice between living under their empire and giving it up. And they chose to live under their empire and quickly destroyed themselves.
Yes.
The British, he says, on the other hand, I guess partially because they're an island and have those cliffs of Dover and so forth and are pretty hard to invade, when at the end of World War II, the question was basically blatantly put before the people of Britain that they would either have to live under the same tyranny as the rest of the subjects of the British Empire, or they would have to give it up in order to keep their English liberty. And in that case, as opposed to Rome, the English chose to give up their empire and, keep their freedom on their rainy little island. And so then the question is, if America is on a pretty parallel path to ancient Rome and to the British Empire, the question is, what choice are we going to make? Are we going to go back to the limited constitutional republic that could probably last another 500 years, or are we going to destroy ourselves? That's
well,
the question.
Yeah.
And all right, Justin Raimondo will hang on after this break. We'll come back and take y'all's phone calls and finish up. I'm Scott Horton from Antiwar.com, filling in for Charles Goyette on KFNX 1100 in Phoenix, Arizona. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Charles Goyette Show. I'm Scott Horton from Antiwar.com, filling in for my friend Charles, the most independent talk show host in America. Last segment here, so let me again give another 100 million thank yous to Dave Lucas, Chet Reynolds, for putting the show together today, and to Charles Goyette for the opportunity to do the show. I appreciate it more than you guys could ever know. Callers, stay on the line. We'll get right to you. I just have a couple more things I got to get off my chest here real quick. Please, everyone, go to antiwar.com today and check out this great speech by James Bovard that he gave at the Future Freedom Foundation conference called Foreign Warring Subverts Freedom at Home. That's what we're talking about here with Justin Raimondo, Republic or Empire. It's one or the other. You can't have it both ways. You cannot have it both ways. And now, just to recap, very briefly, the show today has been the case against the case for war with Iran. We had Gordon Prather on to debunk the nukes. We had Juan Cole on to debunk the idea that or the story that Aminajad had said that Iran will wipe Israel off the map, which he did not say. Phil Giraldi came on to discuss the eternal enmity between al-Qaeda and Iran, despite what you might have read in the New York Sun. And also the threat of American use of nuclear weapons against that country in a preemptive, so-called preventive war. Bob Dreyfus talked about how America is backing the Iran factions in Iraq. Gareth Porter debunked the lies that Iran is responsible for the deaths of American soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan. And also with Gareth Porter, we discussed the stovepipe of this phony intelligence, just like last time, and possible consequences of an American war with Iran. And now Justin Raimondo, the editorial director of Antiwar.com, who's on the phone with me right now, has explained that the neoconservatives who've come up with this crazy policy are a bunch of former communist, radical leftist crazies who became right-wingers but, in fact, are not really conservative at all. And so anybody who missed any of this and wants to go back, it'll all be up on the top of the page in the anti-war radio section at antiwar.com sometime tonight, hopefully. Okay, so now let's go ahead real quick. Sorry for neglecting you guys so much. Callers, let's talk to Joe in Phoenix. Joe, got a question for Justin Raimondo?
Yes, I do. First of all, Scott, let me just tell you, great job for covering for Charles.
Thank you.
I love your website. People who don't know about antiwar.com, they ought to go to it. Justin Raimondo is brilliant. I love reading his writings and essays. Justin, are you still there?
I'm here.
Okay, now that I've blown the smoke, can I take a shot at you for a second? Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. I understand what you're talking about on the neocons, but I'm a little bit concerned that you dismiss or you gloss over it lightly the fact of the relationship of the neocons as it relates to AIPAC, the Israeli lobby, and the awesome influence that AIPAC has on our Congress, which is keeping us still in the war, especially in light of intellectual academic essays but like from Mearsheimer and Walt and President Carter coming out talking about what's going on in Palestine. How can we talk about our involvement in the Middle East, our constant warring in the Middle East, and not talk about the awesome influence that Israel and its supporters have on keeping us there?
Okay, thanks very much, Joe. Justin?
Well, you know, it's a good question. You know, I mean, I'm not, you know, downplaying that. What I'm saying is that neoconservatism is an ideology, and that even if Israel didn't, even if Israel didn't exist, you know, we'd still have neoconservatism. So, I mean, these guys believe in power as an end in itself, in war as the path to what they call national greatness. And yeah, Israel plays a very big role. I mean, they see Israel as kind of a modern Sparta, like the Israel lobby plays a very big role, especially in driving us to war with Iran. I mean, there's no two ways about that.
All right. Now, a very, very quickly. Dennis in Phoenix. Dennis, are you there?
Excuse me. The whole planet is radioactive already, and I'm just willing to see if the current nuclear power plants in the U.S., as well as Israel, it's already radioactive, but will melt down, and they will use it as an excuse to blame others.
Well, I think it's very possible that really the next bad thing that happens, if it's all plausible, will be blamed on Iran. We seem to be working up to that point. Justin, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, I mean, they're going to find evidence that, you know, there's a Hezbollah terrorist network here, and they're ready to bomb us, and you know, whatever. Whatever lie these guys have to tell, I'm sure they're up to it.
All right, thanks very much, Justin Raimondo, editorial director of antiwar.com. Thanks everybody for listening. I'm Scott Horton, in for Charles Goyette. Happy vacation, Charles. Talk to you soon.